So we finished with last time with text 47. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Another point that come up is that, as pointed out before, if someone does something under authority, then the reactions don't go to him. So if one is doing one's duty, own duty, that means it's coming from authority, then there's no sinful reactions. Doesn't mean that it may not work, turn out nicely, but it just means there will be no sinful reactions. So then Krishna points out next verse. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments. Krishna confirms that all prescribed duties, not only the work of a kshatriya, contain faults or smoke. Even a Brahman's work has defects. One should therefore cleanse away the faulty part in one's duty by offering the duty to the Supreme Lord. And for the sake of self-realization, one should serve, giving careful attention to that part of the duty which gives rise to knowledge. Srila Prabhupada's purport sums up the entire process. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. The conclusion is that everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired, and he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. So the point is, rather than give up one's own work of one's own nature, one should perform that. And there is going to be, every work has some fault. So by offering to Krishna, that fault then is relieved, or that fault is not, there's no reaction or no difficulties caused by those faults. Oh, and the other part maybe by Baladeva is that give careful attention to that part of his duty which gives rise to knowledge. So that means is within our service, then performing that for Krishna without that attachment, that itself will gain knowledge. And then within our duties, we may have things that we have our duties, our sadhana, our reading. These things will also give us knowledge. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. These are all within our duties. Depends here. We can take here just specifically to mean varnashram. But also, as devotees, within our duties is also the sadhana. So in the Vedic system, the varnashram, the sadhana would be worked in with the duties of the varna. But, so it's a complete system in itself. But ourselves as following the sadhana, following the pancharatra, then there's also a set of duties for everyone to perform. Getting up in the morning, taking bath, mangal arti, chanting rounds, these kind of things. So these are also our duties. These are specifically spiritual duties. So these are not given up because they are akin to our spiritual nature. And for one who wants to attain to a spiritual platform. So that must be also accepted as part of the duties, because we have come to Krishna consciousness with this idea. We want to elevate ourselves. So these are important. But besides that, those things which are directly connected with the mind and the body, those duties also then should not be given up. What is suitable for that, then we should do. So now Krishna will describe how worshipping the Lord through our work then will elevate us in knowledge. Krishna will now describe further steps up the yoga ladder. Text 49. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfection, the highest stage of freedom from reaction. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting in the way I shall now summarize. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains in this, it being the case that all work is covered with fault, the person on the first level of sannyas rejects the faulty aspects of work, namely the mentality of being the doer and the expectation of profit. Thus, in due course of time, he perfects his sadhana. After having ascended to the level of yoga, he gives up work itself. This is the second stage of sannyas, as described in this verse beginning Asakta Buddhi Sarvatra. So that is the text 50. Then Bhurijan comments here, thus we can understand that a devotee who has worshipped the Lord by his work will not attain Brahman realization in the same way as does the Jnana Yogi. A devotee, after being purified by detached work, attains freedom from false ego and moves forward to realize and serve the Supreme Brahman. So now, in here he's talking about sannyas. Now this is instructions to Arjuna, right? And Arjuna has been worried that there's fault in his finding. I mean fault in his fighting. So then here Krishna points out that every work is covered by smoke, just like fire is covered by smoke. So in this, then it is in relationship to Arjuna's work. Now Vishwanath here has pointed out that in the first stage of sannyas, meaning those who perform Nishkam Karma Yoga, then we have to continue our work. So he gives up rejects the faulty aspects of work. In other words, every work has its fault. What is that fault? That is the idea of being the doer and expecting the profit. Right? They go together. That's why one cannot just think, I will be not attached to the profit, and then one will be successful. It's a stage, but then one has to understand that why I shouldn't get the profit, because I'm not the doer. So we understand both, I am not the doer, then giving up the desire for the profit is easy. Just like if someone else is running a business, I cannot be attached to the profits of that business. It's not mine. But if I think I am doing, then naturally I'm attached. So the whole Krishna has spent many chapters, the three modes of nature chapter, and with the banyan tree, and then in the last chapter, also in this chapter, basically the whole jnana section of the Gita is pointing out that the knowledge of that we are not the doer is very important. Then we will be able to give up the fruits of action. Otherwise, the karma side is, I do the activity, I don't want the fruit. But now, why don't I want the fruit? Because I'm not the body, I'm the soul, I'm not the doer, I'm only the desire, and the Lord sanctions it, and then the material nature does it. So factually, since someone else has done it, it's not mine. Like, I may desire $1 million, and many people are making millions of dollars. But it doesn't mean it's mine. So if we actually factually understand what's going on, then it makes it very difficult for us to logically say, I deserve the fruit, because we didn't do it. Right? So one who thinks, I have done it, therefore I deserve the fruit, then also, okay, you've done it, then all the reactions, means all the smoke, also goes with it. So you steal the fruits because they're not yours. But then we also get what goes along with it. It means the downside, the bad side, the reactions. We get entangled, we get bound. So many chapters of Gita are dedicated to to, you have to follow, I mean, the perfection of life is devotional service, becoming Krishna's devotee. Now, how do we do that? It means that is our goal. Why? Krishna points out, we are Krishna's servant. We're his parts and parcels. We're not the body. Okay, now I understand the goal is to serve and love Krishna, and that the reason for this is that I am his servant. I am not the body, I'm not part of this material world, I'm something different. Mamaivamso, jiva loke, jiva bhuta, sanatana. That we are Krishna's eternal parts and parcels. We're not part of the material world. And the material nature belongs to Krishna. That's his material nature. Is that maya dyakshena prakriti? That this maya is his. So now we know our relationship with Krishna. We know the goal, that we're supposed to develop our love for Krishna. Now, how do we get from this understanding to that realization? The theory to the practical. I mean, the actual realized result. That is through the process of devotional service. Now, in coming to that platform of pure unalloyed devotional service, which is our goal, love for Krishna, then there's a process to get there. That's called abhideya, right? Prayojana is the goal. That's prema. You know, that is actually what we need, what we require. But how are we going to get there? So the abhideya, the process, must contain aspects or stages that we can go through from wherever I am at now and get us to Krishna. That must bridge that gap. So that bridge is sacrifice. So then the sacrifice that Krishna is recommending personally means he himself as the Supreme Lord is recommending to Arjuna, the devotee, is Nishkam Karma Yoga. That when we are still within the realm of material desire, perform our prescribed duties. We have the desire only because we're conditioned. So, the conditioning creates the nature. The conditioning creates our desire to enjoy and all these things. Not the desire, the desires first. Yeah. That conditioning is the habit of desiring to enjoy. So now we must take that conditioning and engage it in the Lord's service without the desire to enjoy. Because we wanted to enjoy, we got the conditioned nature. So now we will engage a conditioned nature without the desire to enjoy. So the fruits of action we know are not ours. That's the first stage. So we see Krishna's dedicated many chapters in the first part. You know, specifically the third, fourth, and fifth chapters. Yeah, to this point. Then one comes to a more advanced level. From that, one becomes detached. I mean, one becomes detached from the work, and one comes to the platform of understanding he is Brahman. Then this brings us to this point here, that we give up work and become engaged in the Lord's service by hearing, chanting in this way. And that is the second stage of sannyas. But now in that first stage of sannyas, there's two parts. What Krishna is very clearly given in the first six chapters of the Gita, and then the knowledge by which we perform that activity. Means if we're going to perform abhideya, abhideya is the process. But there is also the understanding of the purpose and the knowledge you have to perform that process. That's the other half. That's the jnana side, or the knowledge side of abhideya. So abhideya has two parts. Is the actual process itself, and then what is the philosophy and principles and understandings that connects it actually to the goal. So that is the jnana, that's the knowledge. So that is given in this second part. So we see that one who performs a duty in this knowledge, then with time the knowledge becomes more prominent. We rise to the platform of Brahmabhuta. That means the conditioned nature disappears, that identity and all that. We may still have the body. That's what we have left of it. But other than that, but we don't have to act in the body as the body is, because we're not attached to it. So because of that, then we can just absorb ourselves in devotional service. So at this stage, then the hearing and chanting, the Bhagavat Marg becomes totally our activity. The Pancharatrik Marg does not have to be followed. Though for preaching, for example, we will follow it. But factually, the Bhagavat Marg is all we need. We can just hear and chant all day, and that's enough. We're not worried about anything else. We'll hear and chant. If Krishna wants to feed us, he will. If he doesn't, it doesn't matter. You know, we may or may not sleep. It doesn't really matter. Just if you sleep a little, then you won't get bug eyes, and if you don't sleep, you'll get bug eyes. You know, that's about the only difference. But otherwise, they don't. It's not required. Because they just sit and chant. They move around and do work, you take some rest. But only the body's resting. The soul doesn't. The soul is always in absorption, samadhi. So here, then, these first two stages, these first two stages of the Nishkam Karma Yoga, where the first is emphasis on the process, and the second is emphasis on the knowledge of the process. Means one, in both stages, one is performing the process. But in the second stage of it, then the emphasis is, your meditation is mainly on the jnana aspect of it. Means you see through that vision. Means that the humble sage sees with equal vision. That's how he's seeing. Then, that is the first stage of sannyas. Now, as we discussed, I think it was in the last chapter, that sannyas means giving... No, it's in the beginning of this chapter also. Sannyas means giving up the work. Means there's two levels. One is giving up the desire for the fruits. That's the first level. The second level is giving up the work. But you can only give up the work when one's on the Brahmabhuta platform. Because the purpose of doing the work is to bring us to that platform. Right? Like if we want to get to Delhi, we need to use the train. When we get to Delhi, we're not going to ride around in Delhi on the train. You know, we get on the Kalka mail. We're not going to, when we come to the station, then take one of the bogies and drive it around Delhi. No, we're going to leave the train. But we can't leave the train till we get to Delhi. If we get off in Kanpur, then we're not in Delhi. So we, that process of prescribed duties is engaged in until Brahmabhuta. That is the purpose of the prescribed duties, done in detachment. Nishkam Karma Yoga brings one to that platform of Brahman understanding. Then one is left with, now I'm no attachment to the material world, but my full attachment to Krishna, or what is called Purva Rag. Rag means attachment, and Purva means complete. My Purva Rag has not developed fully. And unless the Purva Rag is developed, then we're not taken as so serious. We're taken as serious. Here's a serious devotee. But he will not necessarily be the one that's always allowed to take advantage of service to Krishna. It means the eternal associates that are in that platform of Purva Rag, they are always serving. One who's below that then will sometimes get the opportunity, but mainly they're functioning from the platform of meditation. By meditation they're serving. So platform Purva Rag means that one is accepted to serve with the Lord. You become part of the transcendental, you know, party. So that's essential. Is that coming to the Brahmabhuta platform, that's not complete. Therefore this aspect of the dhyana, or the advanced, the second stage of sannyas. And in that stage, then, we become completely detached from the material world and totally absorbed in Krishna. That brings us to prema. In other words, we must understand that bhava is simultaneously the bud of prema, but it's still not prema. You have a flower bud, it is a flower. But it doesn't have the beauty, nor the smell, or the application of the open flower. So in the same way, bhava is like the beginning stage, but it does not have the full application that prema does. Therefore, even we come to the platform of bhava, on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, still we must progress to prema. Therefore, the second stage of sannyasa is important. So Krishna is emphasizing mostly in the Gita the first stage, because that is what's going to liberate us from the material bondage. But you see, as soon as that's established, the next verse he'll start talking about this stage, the advanced stage of yoga. The, what is it? Yoga Rudha. Immediately, after it's been accepted, in other words, once all doubts are cleared about Yoga Ruruksha, the neophyte, they're the preliminary stages of yoga, performing our prescribed duties in a detached way. Once that's accepted, then immediately he moves to the advanced stage, which is then meditation. And immediately after that, prema. But in the Gita, the main emphasis is on that neophyte stage. Like that. Basically, much of the Gita has been devoted to that. Means one chapter, Dhyana Yoga, was devoted specifically to these two stages, but especially the second half. And third, fourth, fifth chapters have been dedicated specifically for understanding the first half of, or the active half, or the, let's say, the activities of Nishkam Karma Yoga. And then the last, and then the 13th through 17th chapters are describing the philosophy, or the understanding, the jnana that one needs, the mentality one has to have to, or the vision one has to have to perform that nishkam karma. And then in the middle sixth, then he especially talks about bhakti. So he'll touch on the other parts, but he'll always bring it to bhakti. Well, the other chapters, he'll talk on that through the whole chapter, and then at the end bring the conclusion of bhakti. Those other chapters, he'll bring in the bhakti more, him as a person, him as the ultimate authority. Then he'll bring it to that. So this is the two points here. So here, one who is self-controlled and unattached, and who disregards all material enjoyments, can obtain, by practice of renunciation, the highest perfect states of freedom from reaction. It means by practice of renunciation, then one, it means that's the first stage, one can get to the second stage, the highest perfectional stage of freedom from reaction. That's the second stage of sannyas. That's the dhyana. So the first stage of sannyas, anyone who follows the varnashram system, whether brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, doesn't matter if they're working within Nishkam Karma Yoga. You know? They're all considered sannyasis. Sannyasis by actual practical result. Not socially. Socially, only those that have accepted the sannyas order are dealt with socially in that way. But everybody in the whole Daiva Varnashram system who practices Nishkam Karma Yoga is considered sannyas, because they've given up the fruits of their action. Because even sannyas is a fruit for that. It's still within the realm of the conditioned nature. Then, in the next verse, O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection, means from doing the last, then you can come to the highest perfectional stage of reaction, how they can attain to the supreme perfectional stage. Right? So he says the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. From that platform, then you can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, which means pure devotional service. Oh no, excuse me, here he's saying attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge. In the way, I shall now summarize. Okay, now he's going to do that next. Excuse me. Okay, so here means in the 49, that is describing the two parts of the Nishkam Karma Yoga. Means self-controlled, unattached, disregards material enjoyments can attain by practice then the highest stage of freedom from reaction, which will be the upper end of that. Means one who is situated fully in the knowledge aspect and he is totally detached from the work by that knowledge. Then that person then can achieve this supreme perfectional stage, which is the Brahman platform. Right? The stage of highest knowledge by acting in the way I shall now summarize. So now he's going to describe how to get to that. Yeah, how to get to that supreme perfectional stage, the platform of Brahman. Text 51 through 53. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. Then Prabhupada mentions the result of a yogi who adheres to these practices. Thus, when he is completely free from false ego, he becomes non-attached to all material things, and that is the stage of self-realization of Brahman. That stage is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Notice here that those are the same as, isn't it? Same as. It's kind of like a culmination of all these ones. When he described the divine qualities, then he described knowledge. That was what? 12, 8. No, not 12, 8. 13, 8. Yeah, humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So he's mentioned those, plus he put in here, you know, he says, one who lives in a secluded place from that, giving up the objects of the senses, who eats little, because he mentions one who eats too little, who eats just what is required, who controls the body, mind, and power of speech. That's austerity. We mentioned austerity, the body, mind, and words. He's given up the false strength, false pride, false ego, means that I am this body, I am the doer, I am doing any of these things. So basically combining all the points of what he says is knowledge, what is the divine qualities, and what he says is all the various activities or mentalities, understanding in the mode of goodness, then you get this verse basically. So he's concluded all the different things that he's mentioned before on the proper qualities and mentality in this verse. Then, now he describes the Brahma-Bhuta platform. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that stage he attains pure devotional service unto me. Srila Prabhupada writes, to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one has to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. Yeah. So the jnani may attend to this platform, but for him that's the end. But for the devotee, this is actually where it starts getting really serious. Because from this platform, you're unimpeded by the material nature. So now, going towards Krishna is very, very quickly. Very quick. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes here, when one's superficial designations have dissipated, one becomes Brahma-Bhuta, of the nature of Brahman, or pure, uncovered spirit. Because his contamination of the material modes is now finished, he becomes a satisfied soul, and then he no longer laments as before for what he loses, or hankers for what he has not obtained. That is because he no longer falsely identifies with his body and other material things. He, like a child, is equal to all living beings, or to all beings, both the gentle and the wicked. This is because he no longer judges by externals. And then, when his jnana has become extinguished, this is a very interesting point here. This is a very interesting point that's coming up. And then, when his jnana has become extinguished, like a fire whose fuel is used up, he attains to eternal devotion for me, in the form of hearing, chanting, and so on, which was already present within his jnana. Because this bhakti is a function of my internal energy, it is distinct from Maya's energy, and so is not dispelled even after both avidya and vidya are dispelled. It means Krishna's spent so many chapters describing jnana, by how you're going to elevate yourself to the Brahman platform. Now Vishwanath is pointing out here that what's happening is the jnana also becomes removed. Therefore his bhakti is para, separate from and better than jnana. And because it is separate from both nishkam karma and jnana, it is exclusive, kevala. The idea of the use of the word attains, labhate, is that although this bhakti was already partly active previously for the purpose of allowing the achievement of liberation through the process of jnana and vairag, at that time it was not clearly perceivable. Just as the supersoul residing in every living being's heart is also not clearly perceivable. Therefore, instead of saying, he performs devotional service, the Lord says, he attains devotional service. It is just like a person keeping gold and gems within a mixture of beans. After the beans are removed, the gold and gems, which were already present, become separately available in their pure form, kevala. This is now a very interesting point that's been raised. Is that we're calling the whole process bhakti because bhakti was there from the beginning. But because of our attachments to the material world, you know, in both karma, jnana, and yoga, therefore we cannot perceive it. Except for this devotee here who is very fixed in his understanding. He is not the body. It says on his t-shirt, I am spirit soul. Yes. So, means bhakti was there all along, just like the super soul is in our heart all along, but we can't see him. So the bhakti we're not able to perceive, even though it's there, because of our attachment to karma, jnana, and yoga. So as we become purified, we become detached from the material nature, then that elevates us more in knowledge. But then when we come to the Brahma-Bhuta, we're even not attached to that knowledge. That knowledge is there, but we're not attached to it. We're not attached with seeing through that vision, sitting around and seeing everybody as spirit, soul, and things like that. It means one, it's still a distraction, but it's the second distraction after being distracted by absorption in the prescribed duties. So here then what is happening is you have the gems, golden gems of bhakti mixed in with the beans of karma and jnana. Then as we perform the nishkam karma yoga, that takes out so many beans from this mix. And we become more situated in jnana. And as we advance in that, and we come to the Brahma-Bhuta stage, and all the balance of the beans become taken out. So then all we're left with is the bhakti. So the bhakti was always there, but we couldn't see it. Therefore, Krishna points out, he attains devotional service rather than he performs. Because performance means it's actually going on. But we're performing devotional service, but we're not seeing that. We're still attached to this, that, or get distracted by so many things and, you know, think this one, this thing. I'm the doer, they're the doer. Like, I can only dislike somebody because I think they're the doer. So when one doesn't dislike anyone anymore, that's because one doesn't think anybody's the doer. Right? They're just desiring and then getting the fruits of their desires. And I'm desiring, I get the fruits of mine. You know? Then he went situated in that knowledge. And then from that, he becomes situated in that I'm a servant of Krishna. Fully. Means Brahman means I am Brahman, I am soul. But then beyond that is I am a servant of Krishna. Then one becomes absorbed in that rasa of attachment to Krishna, service to Krishna, in one's particular rasa. So that then draws one to Krishna. Then we see we have attained devotional service. We were serving Krishna, we were always chanting his holy name, but now we've attained to chanting in pure devotion. His name was always there. So therefore we attain to devotional service. Like that. But we're performing, but it's still the sadhana. So it's the nishkam karma yoga. But then when it comes to the advanced stages, then that covering is less. And then as that knowledge becomes burnt up by its own activity, then we're left with just affection for Krishna. The knowledge is there, but we're not attached to it. That's the point. So the prescribed duties are a tool. The knowledge is a tool. So then ultimately we come to the point, all that's left is bhakti. So with that understanding, we see that this is the complete path. And then we can decide where we fit now. You know, so either we have prema bhakti at this moment. If we don't have that, then we should just sit down and chant Hare Krishna and be absorbed in Krishna 24 hours a day and never think of the material world or the body or anything. If that doesn't work, then we should take up understanding this knowledge of how the soul, the Lord, the material nature and the soul and their positions and their interrelationships and the duty of the soul and all that. And absorb oneself in that. And if one finds that just doing that doesn't work, one can't properly elevate oneself, then one adds to that performance of prescribed duties without attachment. Then that is what Krishna recommends. That we can do. So then, Krishna then comes to the next point, is that now, yeah. So now the conclusion of all this, then is coming to the platform of pure devotional service. Now we've gone through the two aspects of the Nishkam Karma Yoga. We've come to the Brahman platform. We've understood the qualities of one in Brahman and what he will attain. Now this is the full attainment here, text 55. One can understand me as I am, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, having obtained that bhakti, what then does one achieve? This is answered with the introduction of a new idea in the verse beginning bhaktya. Oh, this is bhaktya mama vijana. Text 55. Only by bhakti does a jnani, or one of the various kinds of devotees, factually understand me. After all, I have said, I am attainable only by bhakti. This being the case, the jnani being discussed understands me after the function of vidya has stopped influencing him. And then he enters into me in the sense of coming to experience the happiness of sayuja, being merged into the existence of the body of the Lord. Some persons want to attain sayuja without bhakti by jnana alone. Imagining themselves to be jnanis, their only success is the trouble they take. They are very contemptible. Others understand that without bhakti there can be no liberation. So they practice jnana mixed with bhakti, but they consider the personality of Godhead an illusory concept superimposed on maya and think that the body of the personality of Godhead is composed of the material modes. Therefore, even when they achieve the culmination of yoga, those jnanis who presume that they are liberated are still contemptible. Thus it is stated, each of the four social orders, headed by the brahmanas, was born through different combinations of the modes of nature, from the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord, in his universal form. Thus the four spiritual orders were also generated. If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashrams fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. This is Bhagavatam 11, 5, 2, and 3. Factually, however, the nature of the Lord's human-like form is Satchitananda. Its being visible is simply by the influence of the Lord's inconceivable mercy. As is stated in the Narayanadhyatma, although the Supreme Lord is always unmanifest, he becomes visible by his own energy. Without that energy, who could ever see that Supreme Master, the reservoir of all pleasure? Many thousands of Shruti statements establish that the Supreme Lord's body is Satchidananda. Displaying his Satchidananda Vigraha, he is sitting at the base of a desire tree in Vrindavan. He takes his personal form, which is the same as the transcendental sound of the Vedas. Nonetheless, the contemptible jnanis interpret other shrutis such as no maya to be nature and the possessor of maya to be the Supreme Lord to mean that the Supreme Lord is also a false concept superimposed on maya. In fact, however, the maya the Lord is conjoined with is his personal internal energy, which is also called maya. However, those who practice jnana mixed with bhakti, like thinking that the personal form of the Supreme Lord is Satchidananda, gradually attain bhakti after the influences of avidya and vidya cease to act on them. They are jivan muktas and are of two types. Some of them perform devotional service for the sake of obtaining sayuja. These achieve transcendental realization of the Supreme Entity and sayuja within that Supreme. They are certainly praiseworthy. The others are very fortunate souls. By some trick of fate, they get the association of sober, pure devotees. By the influence of such devotees, they give up their desire for liberation, like Sukadeva and others. They drown in the sweet taste of the mellows of devotional service. They are supremely praiseworthy. And then the last paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, after attainment of the Brahma-Bhuta stage of freedom from material conceptions, devotional service begins by one's hearing about the Lord. One who hears about the Supreme Lord Automatically, the Brahma-Buddha stage develops, and material contamination, greediness, and lust for sense enjoyment disappears. As lust and desires disappear from the heart of a devotee, he becomes more attached to the service of the Lord. And by such attachment, he becomes freed from material contamination. In that state of life, he can understand the Supreme Lord. After liberation, the process of bhakti, or transcendental service, continues. Actually, liberation is getting freed from misconceptions of life. So then, here we see that it's a very important point that bhakti is above and independent of karma and jnana. So now we have used karma and jnana properly in Nishkam Karma Yoga to come to the Brahman platform. But we must still understand that it's not by this karma and not by this jnana that we get bhakti. We have followed the process given by the Lord, and that determination, that devotion, is then what attracts the Lord to that devotee. By following the Lord's order, by seeing the Lord as the supreme worshipable person, and wanting to serve the Lord, then that attracts the Lord, and the Lord reveals his transcendental form. And from the form, the qualities, pastimes, all that becomes manifest. So the Lord is independent. When he is pleased with our endeavor to follow his instructions, he reveals himself. So it still goes back to the point that we learn in the jnana section that we're not the doer. The Lord sanctions. We desire. So in the beginning we're desiring to elevate ourselves in this process of devotional service. So Krishna says to use this karma and jnana mixed as Nishkam Karma Yoga. Then we can elevate ourselves. But ultimately we have to understand it is not my endeavor that reveals Krishna to me. It is devotion itself only. And that is then bestowed upon us by the pure devotees. Like we see Sukadev and the four Kumaras, they were on the Brahma Buddha platform, but this devotion was bestowed upon them by the Lord and the devotees. So when the Lord is pleased by our endeavor, means our sincere desire and determination, then we see he reveals himself. He shows himself. It's important. So this means that point that the jnana, also when one becomes freed from the jnana, after the function of vidya has stopped influencing him. In other words, we're influenced by knowledge, because ultimately the spiritual realm is they're influenced by love. They love Krishna. Means some knowledge may remain in those who stay in Vaikuntha, because they know him as the Supreme Lord, them as the servant, but we see that the aspects of liberation remain with them. They don't accept the Sayuja, but the other four types of liberation, then they're keeping. That is their desire. So they're on that platform with affection for the Lord. So they're not free from that jnana. Right? But our acharya is talking about the topmost platform, which means one becomes freed from that, the influence. It doesn't mean that one becomes stupid or one doesn't know anything. One becomes freed from the influence. You know? Like Gargamuni, you know, tells Nanda Baba, or you know, that your son is, you know, very special and comes in all the different yugas and different colors and all these different things he tells them. And they're all thinking, wow, this is interesting, you know? But the next moment, he's just thinking, I have such a nice son. So he's not influenced by the jnana. Mother just showed us, sees in Krishna's mouth, all the universes, everything, sees herself, all that. Totally bewildered. Right? Then, after that, then Krishna removes that, and then again she just forgets all that, and then just thinks of Krishna as her child. So they have the knowledge, but they're not influenced by that knowledge. So the Vishwanath uses the example of a fire that is finished after burning up its own fuel. So in the same way, is that knowledge was very important to bring us to the platform of liberation. You're not going to get to that platform without it. But once we get there, then its purpose has been fulfilled and it becomes burned up. I mean, it becomes exhausted. So we have that knowledge, but now we're attracted to Krishna because he is such a nice person. So that bhakti is there. That becomes the essential point. Is that? I think that's. Then, in the next four chapters, four verses. And then it explains about devotional service, pure devotional service, specifically this next one. Text 56. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. The Lord tells Arjuna, Srila Prabhupada mentions here, the word matvyapasraya means under the protection of the Supreme Lord. To be free from material contamination, a pure devotee acts under the direction of the Supreme Lord, or his representative, the spiritual master. There is no time limitation for a pure devotee. He is always 24 hours a day, 100% engaged in activities under the direction of the Supreme Lord. To a devotee who is thus engaged in Krishna consciousness, the Lord is very, very kind. In spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode, or Krishna Loka. He is guaranteed entrance there. There is no doubt about it. In that Supreme Lord, Supreme Abode, there is no change. Everything is eternal, imperishable, and full of knowledge. Few interesting points there. He is 24 hours a day, 100% engaged in activities under the direction of the Lord. So he's always doing just what is pleasing to the Lord. Nishkam Karma Yoga means you understand my nature, I engage that in Krishna's service. That's Krishna's order. Right? But it's the rule. But here it's like you're doing just to please Krishna. Nishkam Karma Yoga basically is we're doing it for Krishna, but we're trying to free ourselves. Also, in spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode. That means even on this platform of pure devotional service, there seems to be some difficulties there. It says, despite these difficulties, he's still placed in the eternal abode. So some difficulties are there. But those are not seen as difficulties. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. A sakam or nishkam devotee attains my eternal abode, Vaikuntha, Mathura, Dwarka, or Ayodhya. But how do these various abodes persist at the time of total annihilation? That was Arjuna speaking. The first one was Krishna speaking. My abode is infallible and does not undergo any loss, even at the total annihilation of the universe. This is due to my inconceivable power. But a jnani comes to the stage of naiskarmya and achieves sayujya only after many lifetimes of various austerities, and only after all the material action of his senses have ceased. How is it then that the devotee attains your eternal abode? Simply by taking shelter of you, even though they are still engaged in karma and still have material desires. And Krishna says, by my grace this happens. You should understand my mercy has inconceivable power. So the point being made here is that Krishna, he gives his mercy to the devotees, and that's what happens. At this stage, this is very important. Prabhupada mentions in one place that by one's own, you know, determination, and that one can elevate oneself to the, basically up to the Uttam platform. But actually to be situated on that Uttam platform, then one must get the mercy of the devotees and the Lord. It means when they bless, and then that's that platform of bhava, this Brahma-bhuta. But then to come to the platform of prema, again they must give their blessing. So that's ultimately what's happening. We're pleasing by our sincere desire, our sincere, you know, engagement in devotional service. Then being pleased, then one comes to that advanced stage and then comes to the platform of prema. In both points, the Lord must give his blessings. Means, of course, he's sanctioning all along, but this is specifically, personally, they must give. This is not the Lord in the heart and this and that. This means to come to the platform of bhava means you have to be able to, like this, attain to the eternal abode, Vaikuntha, Mathura, Dwarka, or Ayodhya. So one of the residents of these realms, or the Lord himself, has to give you admission. And then once you've been admitted, then it's still, you're not a full-time resident. You're there with the purpose to, you're there to serve and do all these things, but you're like still under observation. Then when they are pleased with what you do, then you're given, you're blessed with eternal residence in the holy realm. Like that. So it's still blessing. So that's the point that Krishna's bringing out here. Yeah. Like that. It means one doesn't come to these platforms without the Lord's mercy.
It's very nice in
Brahma-bhuta. Brahma-bhuta, bhava, same. Basically. Means, see, Krishna is using terms that apply to all those who follow the path of yoga. So that is the thing here, is the general terms. You know, you have your, what is it? Yoga Ruruksha and Yoga Ludha. So that's general terms. Anyone following any kind of yoga has these two platforms. Then within that, within the Yoga Ruruksha, you have the Nishkam Karma Yoga, Sakam and Nishkam Karma Yoga, which includes the Jnana Yoga. Then one comes to the Brahma-bhuta platform. Then from there one comes to Bhakti. You know? Now, if we put it into our own language, then we will say this yoga ruruksu, or this nishkam karma yoga, and sakam is the kanista and the madhya. Then they will come to the platform yoga rudha, or the advanced platform of meditation in bhava. Because bhava is meditation. You're in the spiritual realm, in your spiritual body, by meditation. Then when you're accepted that this person is very qualified, then one is blessed again. First one is blessed that one got that opportunity to perform that meditation, one receives one's spiritual form. Then one is blessed again with prema. That is then what is called in here the bhakti. So when we're talking here, then that means prema bhakti. So it's because that is attained, it's real. Just like I may have promise of some money, or let's say I have some money to invest. So its potential is it can become a great amount of money. Then when I buy my stock, then the potential is a little closer. Right? Then as I start selling the stock, it gets more. But it's not until I've finished all that, then I'm left with the full profit. So one can, the whole process, money is going on. But you can say you have attained fully your profits once you've finished all the other aspects. So when we say here, in this definition, then when it's said one attains bhakti, means prema, because you've been going through the various stages of the yoga process. And it is bhakti, but you still haven't taken all the beans out. Right? So you don't realize it, you don't understand. You see bhakti in beans. Right? So I see devotional service, but I also see the fruit I can get from that. You know? I have an activity, I see it as devotional service, but I also see what I can get out of it. Well, I'm the temple president. Okay, so I get a position, I get some respect. I should get a flat. I need money to take care of myself. They want me to run this temple. I got to have money and everything to do all this. So I'm seeing the devotion. Yeah, it's devotion. If you ask them, well, what's running the temple? Is that some, you know, just any old thing? No, it's devotional service. But they're also seeing the beans that are mixed in there. So therefore, the Nishkan Karma Yoga, how to take the beans out. How to de-bean your bhakti. Right? So when it's fully de-beaned, then you end up with pure bhakti, which is prema. So when we put it into our language, then it comes out different. Kanistha madhyam uttam. And in uttam, then there's bhava and prema. You put in the other, and then you can say sadhana bhakti, raganuga, bhava bhakti, and then prema. Right? Or you can put it, describe it as Shraddharu Prema. You know, and just fit it in there. Up through Anartha Nivritti will be the Kanishta, the Sakam. Then from Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, that will be your Madhyam. That is your Nishkam. Then you have your Bhava, which is the platform of Uttam. And then that blossoms into prema, pure and alloyed devotional service. So it's just, in the Gita, it's giving the general thing, because Gita is for dispelling doubts. When the doubts are completely dispelled, all the other books make more sense. Otherwise, we read this, we take up the devotional process, we'll read Nectar of Devotion, but we'll still have the doubts. But those doubts are answered in the Gita. You have doubts about points made in Nectar Devotion. Where's the answer to that? In the Gita. You have doubts about what's going on in the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the different things there in the philosophy. Where are those answered? In the Gita. You have doubts about Chaitanya Charitamrita and what's going on there and relationships and what devotees are doing and what's right and what's wrong. They're answered in the Gita. You know? And then the books of the Acharyas, they're all based on basically the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's basically what they're presenting. Unless they're talking Vedanta Sutra and like this. But otherwise, the Bhagavatam. You have Nectar Devotion. Then Vishwana talks about Shraddhara Prema and Madhurya Kadambini. That's taking one verse from Nectar Devotion. Then so many of the books by the Acharyas, they're all just based on these books. The songs of the Acharyas are based on the Bhagavatam. These books, all these things go back to Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is our Paravidya, our transcendental literature. Gita is the ABCs to it. Chaitanya Charitamrita is like the graduate, postgraduate study of how to live that. Once we've accepted the Bhagavatam, that this is it, how do I do it as a Gaudiya Vaishnava? Then it's shown as Chaitanya Charitamrita. But if you have doubts, Gita answers all those questions. That's the point. The doubts are there. And these doubts are mixed in with so many things. So these doubts, all levels of persons have doubts. So from the Nishkam Karma Yogi, the Sakam, the just one who's endeavoring for knowledge, one who is just pious and giving in charity, you know, the yogi. All these, they all have doubts, and Krishna is speaking to all of them. You know, how to remove the demoniac quality or the envy and envy of Krishna, desire to control and the desire to enjoy. All these demoniac natures are trying to be. So these kind of terms are used. But they're the same principles that are the acharyas then take and bring out more detail on. But it's specifically on the Abhideya. Abhideya Prayojana. But until you've established your understanding of the Sambandha and the whole process, you know, the theory of it, then the practical application of it will be slow. The more we're convinced, then the more things go quickly. That's the meaning of the Vyavasayatmika Bhuti. When the attention is fixed because there's no doubts, or minimal doubts, then one goes forward very fast. One can read all these books and move, progress very quickly in devotional service. But otherwise, if one doesn't understand the teachings of the Gita, progress will be slow in these other areas. One may say whatever one likes, but unfortunately in here, Krishna says, some sages say this, and some say that. And then he says, now hear what I have to say, hear my opinion. So some sages have their opinion, and other sages have their opinions, but then God has his. And following in the footsteps of Arjuna and our acharyas, we accept God's opinion. You know, the others, of course, are based on the shastras and all this. They are all giving parts of it, but they're not necessarily giving the complete whole. So we may decide, I'm going to jump from zero to, you know, 180 in, you know, less than 1.3 seconds, but it won't happen. It can't happen. If it could happen, Krishna, in 18 chapters, would have already explained it. He would have said, then after this, there are also those who think that even though I'm full of material desires and lust, greed, envy, and all these different nice demoniac qualities and all that stuff, that I'm going to start off on the platform of Dhyana Yoga. And they will attain success. Right? But Krishna already points out before, he says you give in charity. Even if you don't have any interest in devotional service, just give in charity, because then you become detached from the fruits. Even though you don't even think it's a wonderful process, not into it, you'll get benefit. And then he says, if you can't do that, then cultivate knowledge. You know? You're not pious enough to give away your things in charity. You really think you're the doer. So therefore, I give up those activities. Because if I do them, it's my stuff. You're of that meager intelligence. And then you cultivate knowledge. But better than that is meditation on the Lord. He says better than that is detached work. Right? So better than that is detached work. Then he says, one who does so, so that is where you can situate yourself. Krishna doesn't give the option that you're going to situate yourself in jhana from the beginning. Because he said, either you fully surrender to me, or you practice sadhana bhakti. He didn't say, if you can't fully surrender unto me, then just sit down and meditate upon me all day and chant Hare Krishna. Right? Unless one is factually on that platform. Because someone who can do that surrenders to Krishna. The Brahma Bhuta platform, why they want. Sukadeva and Sanatana and that. They surrendered. Sukadeva, yeah, and the Kumaras, they surrendered. They were on that platform. So when you say, the best is surrender unto me, means they're not already surrendered. So that means someone on the Brahma Bhuta platform surrenders to Krishna. If you can't do that, then he says you're conditioned, so therefore sadhana bhakti. That is the process. And that means prescribed duties done without attachment, in knowledge. So that means you have to study this Gita to gain that knowledge and to understand prescribed duties. Then from that, you will come to that platform that Krishna said, now you, from this you can surrender. He says, if you can't do that, then you work. Then you get into the sakam and all these different kinds of things. Still, it's devotional service. If you can't do that, then we step outside devotional service. Then he gives, you can start at the point of meditation. But he says, better than that, starting at that platform, because you're not really going to get anywhere, is prescribed duties. Because even if you want to come to dhyana yoga and meditation, you must perform prescribed duties. That's the beginning stage. It means yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana. These six are all to be performed in the platform of Nishkam Karma Yoga. You still are supposed to perform your prescribed duties, because you don't do that 24 hours a day. So the rest of the time you're doing prescribed duties. Then when you come to dhyana and samadhi, at those times you can give up this, because at that point you've come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then you meditate upon the Lord all day and you chant. Then you don't have to do it. So it's clear that one has to understand one's position. Krishna is very careful here.
I gotta tell you this, Srila Prabhupada said that the whole Bhagavad Gita is to establish one's faith. To establish faith.
Huh.
So that the whole Gita is simply to establish one's faith.
The whole Gita is to just simply to establish faith, yeah.
Ultimately, faith in Krishna.
Faith in Krishna. It probably even starts off in the introduction, is that even you don't have faith in Krishna, don't know him as God, this and that, but study the book, just taking me from the theoretical standpoint that Krishna is God and that we are his servant. We are the soul in that. Just start with that, just theoretically. Just say, just for the intellectual exercise, we accept that point. And then with that point, study this Gita. It says, then you'll understand it, because it'll take you through. It's interesting. And then Prabhupada says when that faith matures, it turns into prema. So basically Gita is bringing us up to that point where we can accept that prema is the goal and Krishna's process is the process to get it. That we're not the body, that if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will take care. Like that. Now Krishna starts talking these points here. Text 57. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So then Prabhupada's purport here. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. The servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. The servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. End quote. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. that sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So that point is, one should not whimsically offer the result. We should understand that when we say spontaneous devotional service, we do not mean whimsical devotional service. Many devotees think spontaneous, I do, I don't do, I want to go, I don't want to go. Like I think one devotee was saying, yeah. So that's not what it means. It means that it's prescribed, it's given by the Lord through the disciplic succession, through his pure devotees. They say do this, then it's not whimsical. So we have to, and it says, follow the instructions of this book. So the Bhagavad Gita must be accepted. And it's talking from the beginning stages of, it's even talking before Shraddha. You don't have any faith in the devotional process. You don't even know about the devotional process. Not interested in devotional process. Krishna is telling you what you can do to get yourself to that platform. But his main thrust is those who have that faith, how by, through detached work they can come to this platform of the Brahma Bhuta and then pure devotion. So he's making this very, very clear. So this is what Krishna is saying. So we should accept that, though he talks below that. The whole point is to get that proper faith. Then accepting that, then one can go up. When there's a foundation, one can build on that. If there's no foundation, how one will build? That. So there must be this foundation. So even the how you'd say, the aspects of spontaneous devotional service is still within the realm of sadhana. It's still counted by Vishwanath as sadhana bhakti. It's not prema bhava at all. It's sadhana. Raganuga is sadhana bhakti. It means sadhana bhakti means vaidhi and raganuga. And there's no place where raganuga is explained as not following the vidhi. One follows it. One may give up those aspects which are not favorable for the particular kind of prema we want to obtain to. It means prema in Vrindavan, in Braj. But that has already been given up. Even those who first start the deity worship and different things, it's already been removed. You know, wearing of kusa rings, then using mudra in the worship, then meditation on Dwarka, meditation on Rukmini. Nobody does those. So basically there's five main things. Nyas. Five main things that are given up, just saying don't do these. These are within the realm of Vaidhi sadhana, but they're not favorable for Raganuga sadhana. So basically any of the Gaudiyas don't use them. They don't worship Krishna with these. They're not part of their daily service. So it's just already given up. Even when the newest person who comes along, who is definitely not situated in Raganuga, just in Vaidhi, they're already given up. So whatever's left, Sanatana, no one says that should be stopped. Otherwise, it's going against Gita, because Gita says until Yoga Ruruksha, which means the Bhava platform, or the Brahma-Bhuta platform, only at that time one can give up work. Because work is to purify us of sin and contamination and to gain knowledge of our actual position. So when one's come to Bhava, that has been attained. You've gotten the result of Nishkam Karma Yoga. So it's no need of it anymore. So, but in the Raganuga sadhana, still contamination is there, and we're trying to give that up and become attached to Krishna. So one can't give up the process that creates that performance of prescribed duties for Krishna. And if one says it's not devotional service, then why would Vishwanath make the point that the gold and jewels are already there, just as so many beans are there? So if we know something Vishwanath didn't know, then, you know, we can discuss. But if we're accepting Vishwanath as the authority, the same Vishwanath that is talking about Raghunuga Sadhana is the same one that made this point in the Gita. It's the same one that made a commentary on the Gita. He thought it was important enough. Right? His books are all on these aspects of advanced devotional service, basically. For the Madhyams, Uttams, like that. But he felt it was worthwhile making a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Because he knows that we may start on that platform, and Kanistas don't start off doing what Madhyams do. Therefore, this has to be here to remove our doubts. When the doubts are removed, then one comes to that platform. Then when it comes to advanced devotional service. The doubts are there, then it's difficult. So Gita removes those doubts. That Gita gives faith. It's just how you see it. Just how you see. Prabhupada mentions Govindaji. That means Govindaji means Rupa Goswami's worshipable deity has spoken this Gita. Govindaji spoke to Govinda Basya. That's why it's called Govinda Basya. Means Baladev wrote it down. Krishna spoke it. He wrote it. So those are what Krishna spoke. So Govindaji spoke the Vedanta Sutra. Govindaji spoke this Bhagavad Gita. That's the point, because it's describing the process. Who we are, how everything works, and the process. So Govindaji is the instructing spiritual master. Madan Mohan attaches us to him. He is the Sambandha. He is the Diksha Guru. It's giving the Sambandha, but we see it's no, Prayojana is definitely less, but he points to it. He doesn't expand on it. But we see a large amount is on Abhideya. But it's basically giving the purposes, and it's basically, you could say, the Sambandha behind the Abhideya. Why you're doing it. Why do this yoga? Why perform Nishkam Karma Yoga? What is the knowledge behind it? Why do it? What is the benefits of it? So it's basically, you could say, especially establishing the Sambandha, the relationship between the Lord and the devotee, and the devotee and the material nature, and the material nature and the Lord. That triangle there is being explained. But he's also explaining the point of that you must do devotional service. You must take up devotional service. So this is what would be in Nectar Devotion, the first five chapters, they're called Samanya Bhakti. It's a general description of the glories of devotional service. Establishes that point, that devotional service is the correct thing. Then after that, in chapter 6, he starts describing the process, and which he describes then in there Sadhana Bhakti, which has both parts of Vaidhi and Raghunuga. So both are given. So this establishes there. But you can also see the Abhideya thread in it. Very strong. Just what it is, this process. Because that's throughout, though he's describing all kinds of things. But the point is, you know, you see the friendship in your friend, even though he can discuss any topic, perform any activity, but that thread of friendship remains. Someone else doesn't see them as a friend. They see them as the performer of that activity. But a friend sees my friend, he may be doing this, doing that, doesn't matter, he's still my friend. So when we see like that, the vision of the Acharyas, then they see Govindaji has explained all this. You know, because Govindaji, being the instructing spiritual master, has come to pick us up. So he gives the knowledge, and all the other instructing spiritual masters then describe this and teach us this. Then we become established. Then it becomes perfect. Then you can see the thread, what is there in the whole. Otherwise you think, yeah, just basic stuff. Basic, as long as you're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform and you're associating with pure devotees so that you will take up pure devotional service definitely within no time, then you can say, okay, there's not much for me to gain from Gita. Not much for me to gain from Gita in the way of you know, applying it specifically in my life. And one could say that as long as there were two things. One doesn't like Krishna that much that one is not happy to just hear anything that Krishna talks about. Right? Isn't it? You have a good friend, it doesn't matter what's happening, what he does, you just like to be around. You know? Like that. So when there's actually a relationship, what's going on, what's happening isn't the important point. It's just that you're there with the person. So what Krishna's talking, it doesn't matter. Krishna's speaking here. We're happy to listen to it. You know, he's speaking this now. That book is in front of us. We're hearing it. Fine. I won't say, ah, this is all. Then that is similar, though on a little different platform. Oh, only Krishna's Vrindavan. Everything else is nonsense. That's like saying, you know, lords in Brahman or in Vaikuntha, but what is manifest material world is the Lord on material nature, elements. That's saying that this Gita then is a very low level, low standard, just for beginners. So that means if there's nothing for higher, then that means it's not fully sought. If there's something sought, then it's sought. So then it's something that everybody can take part in. One may have preferences of things other, but one doesn't reject. That's the point. One may have some preferences, but one doesn't reject. Just like you have your friend, any activity is great, though you may have some activities you prefer better. Some situations that you really relish being with them. But otherwise, you know, anything's good enough. You know, it's okay. That aspect is there. How it brings that out. We say, oh, we can only listen to advanced stuff. Then that's fine as long as we're all already on that platform. Then, okay. But if we're actually on that platform, then we see it's Govinda who is speaking this. And when the gopis come also, Krishna starts talking Dharma Shastras, which is a step below Gita. You know? I mean, the Mahabharata is Dharma Shastra, basically. You know, it's not giving the rules, it's showing the lifestyle of those, an example of those who follow Dharma. You know, Yudhishthira's Dharmaraj, and all this is all going on. So when the gopis show up, Krishna starts talking Dharma Shastras. You know, you're married women, it's late, it's night, it's a forest, it's dangerous. So from all these different angles, you know, you shouldn't be here. You should go home to your husbands and take care of your children. And, you know, the wife's duty is being with the husband. He just starts straight Dharma Shastra. You know? And then after all that, then, okay, this is very nice, but, you know, let's get down to the rasa here. But it's also part of the whole thing. And honest devotees will read that again and again. Krishna speaking Dharma Shastra here. He's, you know, goofing on the gopis. You know. But here, we're not gopis. We're not at the rasa dance. So now these things are important for us. So we should not goof around as gopis. Otherwise, we will not attain that platform by which Krishna will goof on the gopis. Vishwanath then continues on the same point. Then all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Then Vishwanath describes Krishna's instruction to Arjuna. Then Krishna's speaking here. Offering all your activities, your varnashram duties, and your ordinary work to me, you should be dedicated to me. I should be your only goal and the whole purpose of your life. In this way you should be renounced and without desires. Always fix your mind on me, both while executing your duties and at other times as well, always remembering me. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan adds, having me as the only goal of your life, you should renounce and offer all your prescribed work to me, your master. Taking shelter of me in Buddhi Yoga, you should always think of me while executing your duties. So here, our Vishwanath, we may say, okay, Baladev is, you know, he's known for his Vedanta Sutra, so he may make comments like this, but Vishwanath is generally accepted by all the Rasiks as other than Rupa, as the main Rasik Acharya. So here he makes it very clear, offering all your activities, your varn ashram duties and your ordinary work to me, you should be dedicated to me. I should be your only goal and the whole purpose of your life. In this way you should be renounced and without desires. He makes that point first. That's what you should do. Then he says, always fix your mind on me, both while executing your duties and at other times as well. Always remember me. Then this is the mood in which one does it. So one performs the duties knowing that they're for Krishna, right? We're the only goal. Krishna's the only goal and the only purpose. And then he's detached from that work, right? So all that takes the proper knowledge. Sambandha, jnan must be there. Then while performing that, then always fix your mind while executing your duties and at other times as well. So then both things. You're doing the duty with the detachment, the proper understanding, and you're remembering Krishna always. And this is what Krishna is saying to do. Then that will bring one to the perfectional platform. So that's clear. Baladev makes the same point. Have me as the only goal of your life, you should renounce and offer all your prescribed work to me. Right? So he says you should renounce. So we think, okay, don't do any of that. He's not saying what Vishnu. But he says, and offer all your prescribed duties to me. So you renounce, meaning you offer all those prescribed duties. So then it becomes very clear what their point of being made. So one cannot make the mistake that in the Gita, Krishna is not saying, perform prescribed duties in a detached mood for him. You know, he said, I don't know, at least 20, 30 shlokas that just say that, and then other shlokas that just say part of that, and then other shlokas that say the other part of that. And now the acharyas are saying. And then, what's his name? Burijan then mentions here, what will be the result of following Krishna's instructions and of not following? Now Krishna brings the point home. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. And then what is meant by saying, if one acts through false ego, not hearing him, what one will be lost? 59. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. So he brings it right back to his performance of prescribed duties. Because they're Krishna's direction. That's why the devotee follows them. They're Krishna's direction. The karmi follows it because he thinks I'll get the fruit of knowledge or the fruit of liberation like that. The devotee's fine because this is what Krishna said to do. Therefore, it's bhakti, but still undebeamed bhakti. Still has the beans of our material desires in it. then Vishwanath Chakravarti adds more of Krishna's and Arjuna's thought. So this is Arjuna speaking. Well, it is true, for a Kshatriya like me, fighting is the supreme duty. But in this particular circumstance, I don't want to become involved, because I fear the sinful reactions for killing family members. In response, Krishna, in a chastising mood, speaks this verse, beginning, Yad Ahankaram. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you'll be falsely directed. By your nature, you have to be engaged in welfare. And then Krishna says, after that, now you are not honoring my words, but later, because you are a great hero, your natural eagerness to fight will unavoidably manifest itself. Then when you set out to kill Bhishma and others on your own accord, I will laugh at you. Like that. Means they're going to do it anyway. They almost killed them so many times, but because Yudhishthir said no, it didn't happen. Otherwise, if Yudhishthir hadn't said no, then Duryodhana and everybody would have been finished long before. They would have already been finished. But because Yudhishthir was such a gentleman, you know, like that, and because of the Lord's desire, then it didn't happen. Yeah, so Bhurija makes some very nice point here. We should note Krishna's words. Whether or not Arjuna surrenders to Krishna, he will fight. Why then, chapter after chapter, has Krishna pushed Arjuna to fight? What was the necessity of Krishna offering numerous instructions? In other words, if Krishna instructs him or not, he's going to fight. So why keep telling him that he should fight? All these instructions just to get him to fight. Because he'll fight anyway. It's just his nature. You know, what can suppressing your nature accomplish? He will fight. Then he points out here, Bhurijan, Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight in the proper consciousness. So it's in Krishna consciousness. Right? Just any old fight's not good enough, but in Krishna consciousness. Therefore he told Arjuna to surrender unto him and fight on his order with devotion. Do it, Krishna explained, because I have already killed Bhishma, Karna, Drona, and all these warriors. The armies have already been defeated and the battle has already been won. Krishna doesn't require Arjuna's material skill for victory, but he wants Arjuna to act with devotion as his instrument. Arjuna's devotion will be expressed by fighting on the battlefield. Srila Prabhupada has explained during a 1974 morning walk in Los Angeles. Somebody protested that your Krishna consciousness movement makes people dull, but they have not seen the Vaishnava. There were no fights. There were two fights in Indian history. One was between Ram and Ravana, and one was at Kurukshetra. And the hero in both was a Vaishnava. We are going to produce such Vaishnavas, not these dull rascals sitting down. We don't want these Vaishnavas, sitting down rascals. We want Arjuna, or we want no one. That is a Vaishnava. Jar. Okay. 16. Okay, and then the last point on this, where he says, continuing. Text 60. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, but compelled by the work born of your nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. So Krishna herein continues, as Bhurijan's mentioning, Krishna herein continues instructing all conditioned souls to surrender to him, because it is in their own interest. If we choose not to surrender to Krishna, however, it does not mean that we will be able to remain independent. All those who surrender and those who do not are controlled. The difference is that the surrendered souls are controlled and protected by Krishna, and the unsurrendered are forced to dance like marionettes, the strings pulled by illusion. That. So that then ends this part. Then, for tomorrow, then we'll discuss when Krishna gets into, starts going more and more into the confidential knowledge. A few more, and then he hits the big time shlokas again. So we'll end here. Jai Ho. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhakta Brinda ki. Jai Nitai Gaur Premana ki. We don't want these Vaishnavas sitting down rascals. We want Arjuna or we want no one. This is the Saraswatas. That mood. The Saraswata mood. Bhaktisiddhanta said it's fire, you know, just fiery mood. That was how he described the prash on the danda. The prash. That little curve on the danda. A little stick. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described it as the how do you say? What do you call it? Something dumpster. Means the axe for just chopping down the, you know, doubts of the conditioned living entities. That's what it's for. So, he was not using a gentle metaphor, but it's that one goes out with knowledge of the Lord, and with that just lays waste to the illusion. So that was his move. And Prabhupada took the same move. Jar.